The phone lines are always open. 203-333-9422. Back to the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
And welcome back to the show. I'm Lisa Wexler. 203-333-9422 is our number. You can call me at 203-333-9422. One of the more devastating stories to have hit our community in the last few months was the unexplained deaths of two women who died within a day or two of each other in December. Brenda Lee Walls, who was in her 50s, and Lauren Smith Fields, who was only in her 20s. And in both cases, these women died unexpectedly. Their bodies were found all by themselves. That's in Lauren Smith Fields' case, actually. There was a man who found her the next morning. But she was only in her 20s. She had only met this man, you know, very, very recently before. Her family was found out about their death, not from the local police when it happened, but through the landlord, because somebody had pinned something on the door. And that was after 3 days of them frantically looking for their daughter. And in the case of Brenda Lee Walls, that family also felt that when they called the Bridgeport police to find out what happened to their loved ones, they were met with disdain, they were met with disrespect. And this became a story in and of itself. Frank Recchia on News 12 broke the story. And there became a day of reckoning, shall we say, in the city of Bridgeport, with eventually Mayor Ganim himself having to face reporters from all over the country. Even CNN ended up covering this story because it was felt universally that the police in the city of Bridgeport could and should have done a much better job of informing families and respecting families who were understandably incredibly distraught when they found out about the deaths of their two loved ones. In the wake of all of this, there have been people in our state who feel like the police need to be told how to do a better job. Joining us right now is Steve Staffstrom, who represents a lot of those people in the 129th in Bridgeport. He's also the House Chair of the Judiciary Committee. He joins us now. Good morning, Representative Staffstrom. I can't say your name very well. Can I just call you Steve? Good morning.
Steve works, yeah.
And is that all right? But it is Staffstrom. I just have to say it slowly. That's all.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good morning, Lisa. How are you doing?
I'm good. So can you tell us what this bill says?
Yeah, so the bill is actually fairly simple. What it says is basically when a police officer discovers a deceased body, they have 24 hours to notify the next of kin of the discovery of the deceased body. They don't have to provide the cause of death because it may not be known that quickly, but need to notify the next of kin. And if they're not able to do so, they need to document the steps they have tried to take in order to notify the next of kin. You know, maybe despite search and voting records and phone records and the person's personal effects, they can't for whatever reason figure out any relatives. The idea is they will at least try, and if they can't do so, then there'll be a record in the file. And if they fail to do so, then that could ultimately be grounds for basically revocation of the police officer's certification to be a police officer.
Well, that's a pretty draconian, pretty strict, penalty that could happen. I want to play devil's advocate for just a minute, because I'm not at all defending the actions of the Bridgeport police at all. But I think nobody is. So my question is, do we really need a law to make the police do what they already know they messed up on and they shouldn't have done that way?
I wish we didn't, but clearly there's been two instances, at least in Bridgeport, and frankly, since we've released a draft of this bill just last week, I've heard of other similar incidents in other communities around the state, which I think we'll hear public testimony on tomorrow when this bill is heard before the Judiciary Committee. But, you know, Connecticut really has been a leader over the last couple of years in looking at how to provide sort of a minimum standard of policing across all communities through some of the legislation we've undertaken. Hopefully this is not used very often. Hopefully it's not an issue. But we thought it was important to, at least in the wake of some of the other accountability and transparency measures we've taken, to take this next step to sort of formally set forth this minimum requirement in the statute.
You know, you're a lawyer, so I'm going to say to you something that you have heard throughout your career, which is hard cases make bad law, right? That's always been, that's sort of like a trite cliche that is always said among lawyers. And basically it means that you take the exception to the rule. I assume it's an exception to the rule that these police officers didn't notify families within 24 hours. It would be common sense to me, an obvious police procedure, that they would look for the next of kin within 24 hours, within 2 hours. It should be done immediately. So you look at that and you say, that to me is obvious. Like, good police procedure would indicate that everything you're saying in the bill would have to be done. And then you have the exception to the rule, which are these bad cases where the police have already been punished. They've been taken off those assignments. I think they're on administrative leave, whatever the police departments will do. And then you say, because of those exceptions to the rule, now we need a law for everybody. I mean, the question, I guess, is how many exceptions to the rule are there?
Well, like I said, I hope not many. And to your point, I think most police officers probably are doing this, and the law will not impact them in any way, shape, or form. But the idea is, in those extreme cases, just like we do in many other circumstances in legislating and in the law, we put in place sort of a basic minimum standard that has to be met and complied with. And here that minimum standard is, to your point, 24 hours is a long time to notify the next of kin.
Should be done fast, like, hello, that should be the first thing they do, right? Knock.
Absolutely. And let's hope that they do. So this is really designed at just those most egregious instances. And frankly, if they can't, like I said, if the police officers cannot locate the next of kin, all they need to do is document the efforts they've undertaken to do so. But it does provide an instance like what happened in Bridgeport with Ms. Smithfields and Ms. Rawls, that the family would at least be able to go and say, wait a second, somebody needs to investigate this. Somebody needs to look at this. There's now, particularly in Bridgeport, a pattern of this. So the case would be referred to the Office of the Inspector General, who we already have in place to investigate instances of police misconduct. And, you know, in the most egregious of circumstances, they could, you know, censure or suspend the police officer, or, you know, again, in the absolute most extreme case, potentially revoke that police officer's license. So,
and who would be doing that? In other words, who would be enforcing that?
So the investigation is conducted by the Office of the Inspector General, and then decertification is done by hearing before the Post Council. These are already existing procedures that are set up for use of force cases and other police misconduct type situations.
Is anybody opposing the bill? Representative Staffstrom, is anyone opposing the bill?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're having a public hearing on it tomorrow. There does seem to be quite a bit of support that we've heard initially. We'll see how the public hearing goes tomorrow.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about? Any other hearings coming up that you just want the public to know about, as long as we've got you?
Well, you know, I think there's quite a few things going on before the Judiciary Committee this year. Another bill that really is being pushed heavily, and happy to come back on and talk about, is removing the liens on somebody who's formerly incarcerated and having to pay back a portion of the cost of their incarceration.
Oh, I've never understood that. I mean, really.
It is such an impediment to people becoming productive members of society. So we're looking
also
to repeal that this year.
You're taking away someone's freedom. Is it even constitutional to keep leaning their money?
Good question. So I think that hearing is actually next Wednesday, a week from Wednesday. So maybe we can
talk about that. That's always been shocking to me. And as a probate judge, I've seen it. I've seen it come right down in my court once in a while. I will say, for people that are incarcerated, that have been incarcerated, that then come into an inheritance, I will tell you that I have seen it sporadically in my 8 years as probate judge, where we've notified the relevant department and they've come back in and they've said there's a lien, but I have not seen the lien actually enforced.
Well, the liens are being enforced because it's about $6 million in revenue the state collects every year.
So maybe in these particular circumstances, they didn't feel that it was wise or just, but, you know. But it was never a lot of money anyway.
No, and that's the point is, I mean, there's cases out there where literally the state is pursuing someone for a couple hundred bucks or a couple thousand bucks. I mean, it is not, it's not a lot of money to the state, and it certainly is not going to cover the cost of incarceration. But, you know, that couple thousand bucks might be the difference of somebody being able to fix up their car to get to work.
Or get a security deposit in a house, you know, get a rent.
Correct.
That's the key. They usually, when you're out of jail, you very often, I mean, you're climbing back up the hill, and you very often have very few resources to do it. So, okay.
So that's another bill that's actually coming out of some of the advocacy groups here in Bridgeport, some of the prison reentry folks and the like. And so we're really hoping, that one sees the light of day this year.
All right. Well, Representative Steve Stafstrom, thank you so much for joining us. Head of the Judiciary Committee, a hearing on this issue on Lawrence Smith Fields. Is the public going to be able to testify? Is this a Zoom hearing? What is this?
It's a Zoom hearing. Tomorrow it starts at 10 a.m. and anyone who would like to submit written testimony can do so, or anyone who'd like to sign up to testify in person on Zoom can. They just go to the Judiciary Committee's website on the General Assembly homepage, cga.ct.gov.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for joining us today, Representative Steve Stafstrom from the 129th in Bridgeport. We'll be right back with Brian Farnan. He is running for election this year, but he has started a petition with respect to a controversial bill to essentially not allow municipalities to create a distinction in pricing on their beaches. We'll be right back.